Hello and welcome to the latest episode of Heads Talk with me, Elaine Pringle-Schwitter, the podcast where we talk to C-level executives, leaders and heads of multinationals. What are the current topics? They talk, we listen. My guest today is the Group Chief Security Officer for a leading and well-known publishing company. He's a board advisor with expertise in IT strategy, information security, software development and IT service management. But before we get into that, here's a message from our sponsors. This episode is sponsored by Axia. Axia is the leading private cloud platform in the Alessian and Mattermost ecosystem, combining intelligent solutions with security and control. Axia's clients profit from digitalization and automation of critical business processes in a cloud and hybrid architecture. 150 staff provide migration, engineering and support services to over 200 leading organizations in 32 countries.
Heads Talk Podcast with your host Elaine Pringle-Schwitter.
Ewan Peters is a seasoned IT and security specialist. He oversees and consults on information security, GDPR, PCI, DSS, ESG responsibilities for the enterprise, compliant enterprise IT, platform design, build, maintenance, and assisting with merger and acquisitions. He has a record of successful global strategic planning, delivering enterprise infrastructure requirements, ambitious security changes, and effective resource management. He often challenges board and hold them to account, ensuring the alignment of strategy, technology, regulatory and business needs. He has been described as one of the most competent C-level executives that his team has worked with. He is very calm and controlled in his demeanour, which definitely goes well with security management. He's a forward thinker, utilising next-generation technology and creating next-generation ideas to overcome the ever-changing security threats landscape. An interesting point was mentioned about Johan in that when Johan speaks, many people listen. This is a very apt statement, as this podcast, Heads Talk slogan, is when heads talk, we listen. Away from his professional duties, Johan has charitable commitments and voluntary activities, which we may touch upon in the course of this discussion. So without further ado, I'd like to introduce my audience to Johan Peters. Welcome to Heads Talk and happy to have you here.
Thanks, Elaine.
Right. You're the first CSO or CISO for this business podcast. So very excited to receive your insights in a number of topics. So let's dive in and talk about the role itself. Like the CDO, the Chief Data Officer, the CSO role has morphed in this digital age. Explain to my audience how the role has changed and what new things are required from you and your team that previously was perhaps not a priority or not at the forefront of your role today.
I think in the past, it was a lot about playing catch up and having to drag info out of the business and doing what we thought was the best to secure the business. Whereas now, we are a true business partner and working with the business to enable us all to deliver. Working with various teams to understand the requirements and working together to find solutions and deliver and enable all our stakeholders to do that.
One of the things I talked about with the CDO that I had on one of the episodes of Heads Talk is decentralization of data. With the increasing trend to democratize data in an organization, what additional challenges and problems does this bring to you and your role in terms of security, integrity, and safety of the data? Your role also shapes the reputation of a company, so one assumes it is very pressured. Please also elaborate on how you maintain, as described in the introduction, the calm and controlled demeanour in order to carry out your task.
I think it's always good to be calm because that way you can think clear. If you have a hot head and do things with knee-jerk reaction, that's often when you make mistakes you pay for it. Using tools such as Segment, Tag Manager and Tableau dashboards, we have managed to create a more self-service approach to accessing analytical data. Access is controlled via user login to the user interface and with a role-based controls in place. The main issue we have is with data that holds personal identifiable information, and this is not made available in any interactive dashboards available to a standard dashboard user. The personal information is only available to analysts that build the dashboards. This access is secured by two-factor authentication, and a license is needed to be installed on their machines to enable to do it for them. Dialing of data is switched off below the admin level. In a business, it's very important to keep our customer data, but also our employees' data, safe at all times. And we always do regular reviews on our outsource partners we use. We have discussions with them to understand how are they keeping our data safe, because at the end of the day, even though they are processing that data for us, we are still liable for that data, and we're liable for the data we're holding for the different customers and for our employees. So we want to do the right thing, we keep the data as secure as possible.
Johan, I'm not quite sure about the connection, but we've missed every other word in your answer to this. I'm not quite sure about your location. Are you somewhere where it's difficult or the location is quite weak? And so the connection is quite thin?
Let me change my connection and see if that helps.
Yeah. We do want the audience to hear your answers clearly. Okay, so continuing in your role as CSO, what business challenges have you faced or procedures expedited as a result of COVID-19? What sort of security threats does your organization face anyway? And give my listeners an account of your experiences being a CSO during this pandemic.
I think it's an interesting question, as a lot of companies have different experiences, some good and some not so. Mm-hmm. I'm happy to say that we were well prepared when it came to moving staff from the offices to working from home. However, the risk does increase by doing that. Yes. Awareness and campaigns to make staff aware of the risks and how to best mitigate it, especially when phishing scams increased around COVID-19, and we've seen quite a few of those coming out. Mm-hmm. We provided IT security checklists, best practices when using conference apps and programs, mm-hmm. and things to be aware of when using your own company, your own equipment and company equipment. Data protection, one-stop organizations asking employees whether they are experiencing any COVID-19 symptoms or introducing appropriate testing. But it does require you to be responsible with people's personal data and ensure it's handled with care. If you're making decisions about your staff based on the health information you collect, you must make sure your approach is fair. You have to think carefully about any detriment they might suffer as a result of your policy and make sure your approach doesn't cause any kind of discrimination. Any personal data you hold must be kept securely and only held for as long as necessary. It's also good practice to have a retention policy in place that sets out when and how personal information needs to be reviewed, deleted, or anonymized. You have to inform individuals about their rights and in relation to their personal data, such as the right of access or rectification. Staff must have the option to exercise those rights if they wish to do so, and to discuss any concerns they may have. Last but not least, making my budget stretch further, as you can imagine, the pandemic had a huge impact on revenue and things are starting to get better, but it's about being smart and seeing how efficient we can use our resources. As you can imagine, we have quite a few offices spread across the country, and all those offices have been closed down. We've only opened two of those offices so far, with the minimum amount of staff going in there, which is only for essential work. Mm-hmm. So it was a bit of an impact and a change in the way of how we do work, because the majority of staff used to work from an office, where now they're working from home. I think the interesting thing is how the concept of working from home has changed and how people have adapted quite quickly to that. But it does keep my life interesting and challenging, making sure we still keep our staff safe and secure.
I can imagine. I can imagine, especially if working at home is just a novel concept. Okay. And in order to work at home, we need to introduce the sort of the digital element of this conversation, because like most organizations operating in this digital era, you've had to change. You've just touched upon some of it. What changes were made to your organization, infrastructure and even operating models as a result of digitalization? How has security management been affected? You've mentioned some of it, the working at home element of it, but I'm sure there's much more to it. I'm assuming as well best practice approaches had to be developed quickly, and now there must be a standardized model for CSOs and CISOs to use, or is that assumption wrong because things are forever changing and at speed?
Things are always changing at speed, and you always have to keep adapting. The good thing is before the pandemic, we were really down the road with a plan to make sure, because we had an element of people working from home already, because freelancers and some staff working from race courses, etc. So we had to have a plan in place that we could ensure those staff can work securely from wherever they work from. The nice thing is I always wanted to have a big mass test of the infrastructure we've put in place, and COVID-19 made it possible. I suppose that's one of the good things that came out of COVID-19, is that I could test my DR plan, which wasn't quite planned, but it came through and it worked, and I was very happy. I actually had the chief operating officer said to me, are you sure everything is working fine, because it's going too well? And I said to him, thank you very much. I'll take that as a chief objective.
Well, you know, I was going to talk about disaster recovery later, but since you've mentioned it, let me just ask you, what sort of disaster recovery backup systems do you have in place if the inevitable happens, and what can you tell my audience?
That's an interesting process we've been through. So we started down the road quite a while back, a few years ago, to make the decision of moving from on-premise to the cloud. And we started off with about, I would say, about 80% of our infrastructure being in the data center.
Yeah.
And, over the time period, over the last, I would say, 2 to 3 years now, we've moved to the cloud. And I would say we're probably about 90% now in the cloud. People will think, well, hang on, why wasn't DR and BC so easy to do before? Well,
yes.
Why wasn't it done? It was doable, but it wasn't as simple and it wasn't as cheap as what you can do it now for. Going to the cloud is a bit of a paradigm shift, and I often refer to it as the typewriter engineer, that if they didn't adapt to go to being a computer engineer, they died out. And for me, it's the same kind of thing, thinking about that we move from having physical machines in a data center in racks to moving to the cloud. And it was a bit of a paradigm shift that had to happen in the business. Because engineers themselves were still thinking about the physical hardware, physical machines, installing software on there, etc., where you had to move away and start thinking cloud. And once you make the paradigm shift, life becomes much easier and you start seeing the benefits and the efficiencies that you can get. The platforms, the landscape is getting so much bigger and so much quicker that you just can't cope the way we used to do things, and you have to move on and embrace what's happening out there and get with it. Otherwise, you're going to get stuck behind.
Yes, indeed. So I think one of my previous episodes when I talked to the C-level execs, when he talked about these clients always having qualms and any excuse not to go down the digitalization route. Now it's a necessity. Now it's a survival mechanism. Therefore, you haven't got the time and the luxury to be negative towards it. So I think if you want to look at some positives in terms of what COVID-19 has done, it's kind of expedited people's comfort with that sort of change.
Indeed.
Indeed,
it has actually fast-forwarded some of the roadmaps. I mean, some of the stuff I was planning to do in a year's time, I've started doing now because the opportunity is there now to do it now. So certainly, fast forward at some of the roadmaps that we have planned for.
It is quite a unique time, and it enables some of the things that most of us have put on the back burner. But here we are today, going forward with it. I'd like to move on to the next question, which is about collaboration and work you do. This next question about collaboration with other organisations in your capacity in security management. Do you work with specialist companies to see how hackable your corporate data is? I mean, what do they do if you do work with them? And if you don't work with them, do you work with state personnel or state services? Effectively, what sort of organizations do you work with very closely in the quest to maintain security and integrity of your data?
So we use third-party services to review our security posture against best practices against other companies of our size and in our industry. We also employ third parties for penetration tests, and we use third party services to monitor for any of our data being seen out in the wild. Encryption is always a key concern, and the best way to ensure that secrets stay secret is to use encryption. But we have a multi-layered approach that we use with various outsourced companies where, for example, we use specialized seeded data to go into our databases, and we have a company externally that monitors the dark web, the web, etc., for that specific information. So in case our database does get breached and information does get out there, we will have alerts immediately coming up saying potentially our database has been breached and this information is out there at the moment. And the similar thing we do with getting companies to come and have a look and do testing against our digital products for end users, for our internal systems, etc. So we have a high level of confidence. We are doing the right thing and we're doing the best possible we can. We can never be 100% secure. And so we always want to make sure we're doing the best we can. And if not, then we'll have to rely on our process of, in case something has gone wrong, that we deal with it in the correct way.
So in a sense, you've kind of answered the next question, because it's I hear this all the time, and this is a phrase, you know, staying one step ahead in cybersecurity. And the question would have been sort of, what does that mean practically and operationally for the security team, which I think you covered. But I think my audience would also be interested in, if you could answer this bit, is are there any particular threats for your organisation, the type of organisation that you work in, i.e. publishing house?
So the interesting thing is our organisation, we focus on digital content around the sports industry. However, so we provide analytical data for sporting events, horse racing, greyhounds, football, etc., etc. But because we are affiliated with the bookmakers, we sort of fall in two industries from a risk profile. The one is from a media point of view, and the other one is from a bookmaker point of view, because we're linked to that extent. So the systems I have in place to do scanning for us and check for us and do our risk assessment, look at both industries and compare us against the bookmakers and also compare us against media organizations, which is quite useful, because if there's any chatter on the dark web about somebody wanting to go and take revenge on gambling, for example, we could be a target for that.
Yes.
If there's something going around in the media because the media has done something and they felt that we are part of that, then we will get alerted from that as well. We're always in that twofold kind of scenario where we could be hit from either side and we need to be prepared for it.
That's quite interesting, actually. It's very, very specific to the industry that you're in. So what happens with a data breach? When we talk about cyber threats and the rise in numbers, can you put some figures on it for your organisation or organisations that you know of? So my audience gets a sense of the work involved in maintaining security and integrity. You can give us examples of data hacking, and you talked about the encryption, and companies held ransom would be great as well. If there are sort of war stories that perhaps you could tell us about.
Yeah, so interestingly, I joined the company back in January 2013 as the head of operations. One of the questions I asked on day one was about when last did we do a pen test, etc., just to get myself familiarized of what the company was doing, etc. And I was taught not to worry about it. Who will ever hack the Racing Post? Sadly, 10 months later, we had a breach. Our journey as looking after security in the company started at that point. We've done a lot of work since then, and seeing multiple breaches happening every year to companies, it keeps reminding us why we take it seriously. And it does help that I have the CEO and the board that fully supports us on this. Although we did not have once since then, thankfully, and touching lots of wood at the moment, I'm always of the view that it could happen at any time, and we should do our best, firstly, to avoid it, but also prepare for it. You can never be 100% secure, as I said before. We do regular scenarios to make sure our process works and it's current. We did one where only myself and my security manager and some external auditors knew it was a test, and the rest of the team, right up to the CEO, was under the impression it was a real breach. And on the day we had it, the actual board was in for a meeting as well, which was sort of well-timed as well. But yes, I was moaned a bit afterwards. Do it on the day the board is here? Yes. So we played it through. you could see the look on people's faces still remembering the breach that we had in October 2013, even though it was a few years later now. Yes. But I kept it together, and it worked out quite well up to the point where our chief marketing officer was about to pull the trigger and sending out a mass communication to all our customers to explain what happened. At this point, I had to declare it's been a training exercise. Everybody was very relieved at that point. But the CMO was about to throw her laptop at me.
Well, I can imagine.
Everybody was under this pressure and really thinking a breach has really happened and we've lost customer information, etc. We went through the whole process. It was a good exercise. Mm-hmm. And when I was thinking about how to do this, I mean, the prescribed way is you go sit around a table and we say, Rob, we have the following scenario. What are we going to do about this? How are we going to approach it? What's your role going to be? How are you going to do it? Mm-hmm. And I thought, yeah, that's all lots of hypothetical questions and what people will say they will do, but not actually what they will do in the scenario. Mm-hmm. So I thought I wanted to make it as real as possible. And it was actually a good experience for everybody. And everybody actually enjoyed it afterwards and said, well, actually, that was good. And everybody felt they had the confidence if something did have to happen, that we'll know what to do. And I got very good feedback from the board as well. And I was very proud mm-hmm. that we've accomplished what we've done and the time we've did it. And I have the confidence that if something should happen, we will do it professionally and we'll have the best possible outcome to that. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We see it on a daily basis. So we can see when people are scanning us and trying to do attacks on us. And it's literally in the thousands that's happening. I mean, people that think, well, they're never going to get hacked or it's very rare will happen. It's happening on a daily basis. I often speak to customers or suppliers and I say to them, right, as part of the process, we want to do a test. We want to do a vulnerability scan. We want to do a pen test. No, you can't do it. So why not? What's our production system? What if it goes down? And I said, well, you do know this is actually happening on a daily basis from all the bad guys out there. I'm the good guy. I just want to make sure you are right. And if you're not, I can help you just sort it out because I want to make sure when you hold my data, you're doing it safely and I can give you the best possible way of doing it. So when you say to me, you don't want to do it, I have concerns. I really have concerns because you have then no understanding of what's happening out there. It's a practice life. You know, like you have to pay taxes, like you're going to die. People are out there every day trying
to hack. That's one of the things that's going to happen. And you know hackers are getting more and more sophisticated. And it seems like within your organization, your work and the role that you play is taken at the utmost serious level. So I'm assuming you would agree that in other organizations, the CSO role or CISO role, they really do need a seat at the decision-making table, especially on budget requirements, rather than perhaps be embedded under, I don't know, a CFO role or under embedded on the COO. Wouldn't you agree?
I definitely would agree. And I'm quite well known. I don't stay quiet. I say my say. And I would fight for and justify for what I need for the business. And I always take it back down to the business impact. End of the day, the board, the shareholders, etc., are there to make money. And if I make recommendations, I make recommendations to keep the business safe. And I always take it back to, this is what it's going to cost you to do it, but this is what's going to cost you if you don't do it, and this is a potential impact of what's going to happen if you don't do it. So, end of the day, I will support the business either way, and I'll do the best I can to support them. I mean, we all understand these times, you know, a lot of businesses are suffering because of revenue, etc., and you have to sometimes reduce some of the stuff you have, and you have to do smarter ways of doing it. But as long as the company understands what are they in for and how are they increasing their risk, because what you don't want to have is to just go and do things by yourself and putting your business at risk, and then something goes wrong, and they go, well, we didn't know this. Mm-hmm. Be very clear with the business so they understand what are you in for, what this potential is going to happen if it does go wrong. And this is what I'm saying, from where we used to be, where we thought we were doing what we think was best for the business to, now we are working with the business as a partner and say, yes, we all agree, we can understand where we're going, and we understand by not spending this money, this is what the risk we're going to be taking. And if it goes wrong, this is what's going to happen, and we're going to be open about it. There's no about things hiding things away. Just be all open and honest, and what is the best thing for the business to do right now?
Okay. Let's look at blind spots in the world of cybersecurity management, because I'm sure there must be quite a few of those you know about. Firstly, what are they? Can you tell my audience what they are? And how do you go about ensuring visibility?
So I absolutely love blind spots. They are my challenges in life. and we used to have a lot of them, and I can gladly say we have reduced, but they're still there.
Yep.
So shadow IT was and will remain a big problem. It's almost a constant arms race between people and departments wanting to do new, exciting, and new entrepreneurial things. And the rigorous of security governance and compliance is that balance. In many ways, organizations are like people. As they mature, their priorities change, and keeping up with what is hip and modern and technology becomes a more laborious undertaking. We want to enable our stakeholders to deliver, but whilst we keep the business secure and compliant, we have a good working relationship with the different functions in the business, and we work with them to collaborate as part of the process. However, as we're all human, we do have systems in place which will give us indication where we can, when we are not adhering to our own governance, and then we have to have the conversation and get back on track. It's never simple, and it keeps it interesting and challenging, but that is why we are there, to guide, help, and enable.
Just as a side question, usually where are the blind spots coming from? I mean, can you sort of explain that to us?
It's where, I don't want to name and shame anybody in the business.
generally.
It's when something has come up where the business wants to be innovative and they need to get something done quickly. And they will go, for example, to engineering, and they want to know, can you do this for us in engineering? And say, well, we have all these projects, and it's going to take a while to get there. Yeah. People will then generally say, well, hang on, I can go quickly online and go buy service X, Y, Z on a credit card and get it done. Although we've done a lot of work around that and say, well, before you go into this, let's come and have a word with us. Let's see how we can help you. Let's see if we can do a better way for you.
Yeah.
There are often times where there's a lot of pressure for people to get stuff done, and they try and find the shortest route to get it done. And it happens. And sometimes, although it happens very rarely, we still have the occasional thing where we see on LinkedIn, oh, we've done what?
Yeah, it's fine.
And then we can have the conversation to understand what's happened, what happened, and how can we make it better next time. But certainly, I would say 4 years ago, that was the normal occurrence, and it's caused us a lot of pain. We know that is happening very, very rarely. And it happens on occasions where something quickly had to happen and it just wasn't enough time. But I can say with all the awareness training we've done, et cetera, the staff in general has been doing a very good job and doing the right thing and asking the right questions. So when we do find things like that, and we have the conversation, we go through the process they've gone through, they have asked the right questions and made sure we are safe and secure. It's very, very rare that we find a situation now where somebody's done something, and if we hang on, you haven't asked about how the private data is going to be transferred, for example, and we are secure, and we've done it correctly, and we have done that privacy impact assessment, etc. That happens very rarely now. So I'm proud to say, with the awareness campaigns that we've done, etc., the business are in a much better place. But it does happen, and it's going to happen in all companies. End of the day, people would love to get their job done, and if you don't make it easy for them, they're going to try and find shortcuts. And it's for me and my guys to go and understand what has happened and how we can make it smoother the next time.
Right. So it's about largely about cutting corners and human error. So it kind of leads me nicely into my next question, which is, you know, artificial intelligence. How's that helped, if at all, in maintaining security in particular data security in your organization? I mean, have you got any examples? And has AI been used maybe in your organization or an organization that you know of where it has helped minimize the amount of blind spots that you have in the cybersecurity world?
So, yes, AI, machine learning, I still have a bit of a bugbear of the word AI because my thinking of AI is slightly different, and I think we more commonly use machine learning. But anyway, that's me personally. The volume of information has increased drastically over the past decade, not only in terms of human content, but also in terms of supporting information that is logged and kept. And if you think about it, we used to be dealing with megabytes and then gigabytes. We now have petabytes, and this is going up and up and up. We monitor and store more events than ever, far more than any human could ever sift through. I mean, there's no ways I can go and hire a team that's big enough to go through all the different logs, mm-hmm. understand what's happening in there. So it makes sense to leverage computing power to use for that kind of data and use machine learning. Mm-hmm. Not only is it cost-effective, but a smart way to do it. So, for example, our endpoint defense solution leverages that kind of technology. Not only does it make it better at detecting the suspicious activity, but it isn't reliant on being constantly updated with new rules that can become mm-hmm. obsolete in days. But it also isn't dependent on the internet connection. And the best part is that it's so lightweight in terms of impact on the user that they don't even know it's there. We've deployed machine learning in some of our products where it is writing spotlights for our products, which has allowed us to grow faster without having to grow with people. Because if you look at what we used to do and the amount of humans you need to write all those different stories, that's not scalable when you go to an international market. Right. It will just cost too much. And we've actually deployed that, and it's working very well. So there's very good benefits for machine learning in the business of how it can be utilized. And certainly in security, we are utilizing it for all the different event logs, et cetera, to go for there to spot trends and make our life much easier.
So your organization, which has sort of started in 1986, has really embraced digitalization, has really embraced sort of the new way of working, hasn't it?
Oh, definitely. And our vision has been for the last, I would say, 4 years now to be digital first. And we've started going through a transition. And we're just about there now, where everything now is digital. And it's no longer newspaper anymore.
But you still have your print publication, because even as a child, I remember seeing my dad with the Racing Post. So
that's great. And that's only one element of what we do. You know, when I was phoned, when I was phoned for the head of operations for the Racing Post, they spoke to me and said, "You're going to love this job. It's for the Racing Post." And at that point, I thought about the Racing Post as the daily newspaper publication, and that was it. Yes. Until I joined and I started realizing, oh my goodness, this is so much more than just a newspaper. Yes. It's actually a lot of content, which one of the ways of it's being displayed is that newspaper. But there's the iPhone, there's the Android app, there's the, used to be an iPad app, there's the website. We do syndication with our B2B customers where we provide digital information to them. We take information, we manipulate the data, we add benefit to that data, and we publish that data as well. And this is worldwide. So the concept of just having a daily newspaper publication in the UK is only a small part of what the whole group does. It's so much more. And that's when you start realizing of what's involved from a technology and from a security point of view. Worldwide, about 6 different office locations. We now have a group of companies in some of the brands we covered. So you know about the Racing Post.
Yes.
But we also have other brands like My Racing, Three Super Tips, Pixwise, All Sported, Intella, and then also an agency, RCS Digital and Translate.
So which one came first? Was it knowing the data that you had and wanting to do something with it, or was it digitalization that gave you the ideas of this is what we're going to do with it?
So it all started off with the newspaper. Back over 2 decades ago, or more than that now, and it evolved. And obviously, we captured a lot of information over that time period. And then I think it was back in 2007 when the website was launched and we started doing the iPhone app and so on. And it just all started going from there. And then it's about 3.5 years ago, I think now, we were bought by a private equity firm. And as part of that process, we started focusing heavily on transition, and we also had a few mergers since then. So we bought 1, 2, 3 major group companies that we've integrated into the group now, which has grown and made us truly international now.
That's interesting. I want you to hold on. I want you to hold me this question, not to answer it yet, because I'm ask my next question, but the question I had in mind based on what you've said is like, well, what is in the future then? What have you guys been talking about that you can actually reveal to our audience? It'd be quite interesting to see where, what's next for your organization? But before you answer that question, let's move on to another element of using technology in order to enhance the way you do. Because I know, for instance, what's widely used in the aviation industry, but it'd be interesting to know. The answer may be no, so then we can move on. But do you use any form of biometrics in your organization in your capacity as a CSO? And if not, do you see this going forward? And so can you answer that question and then answer what's going to happen in the future? That'd be great.
So I have to say yes, because just about everybody has a mobile phone.
Yes.
So biometrics sometimes sounds like a big scary thing, but in truth, we have been using them heavily for years now, just not in the office as much. Our phones use fingerprints locks, as they are fast and easy to secure. Face recognition is also now becoming the norm, and it is unlikely for this trend to be reversed. We will see this becoming more common in the workplace. I have no doubt about it. It's hard to know for sure when, but it does seem more likely now with the big shift towards working from home as a result of the pandemic. Even roles in departments that have always historically had desktop boxes are now using laptops, and simple, efficient ways of securing these will become more important, not less. And certainly from a product development point of view, we will be looking at how we use that technology going forward to make our applications for our customers more secure and better and easy to use. So certainly, I can definitely see it, if not sooner rather than later, it will becoming part of norm.
And perhaps future goals for your organization, where it's going?
So in terms of where we're going, we're heavily focused on that digital transformation. As I said before, we are now 90% in the cloud. We have a few more systems which is left on traditional on-premise locations, which we are working on, which will either be retired or moved within in the next year. We want to be a fully digital business in the cloud. We want to make sure we provide a product to our customers which is efficient and is useful to our customers that they can use, they can provide some of the benefit and the data that helps them, but at the same time making sure it's secure and keeps our customers and our employees safe and secure.
I'd like to end on this question. It's a sort of general question, so answer it as you may. Sort of 30, 40 years ago, if we talked about the chief security officer, and for someone to explain the role, it's very different to how you talk about the chief security officer now. So I'm going to ask to jump 40 years ahead. Sort of what do you think the future role would be? How do you think that would morph? Or how do you think the name would even change? What is just some of your ideas on that?
That's a very interesting question. I mean, looking 40 years back to where we are now, it's changed drastically. And I think the same thing will happen again. Looking at how technology is going, quantum computing around the corner, and how that's going to change things. I think there will always be a role for some kind of element of security in the business. Mm-hmm. However, I think that will probably get more involved as we go. I mean, even my own role, the traditional CISO role is around information security. But my role in the business is more than that. So I do information security, I do the ESG part, which is the environmental, social, governance responsibility, compliance. I think it will just evolve more and it will start integrating more and more with the rest of the business. Because we are getting more digital and because of the pandemic that being forced even more now, that becomes more vital for the CSO or the CISO, et cetera, to be much more involved with what the business are doing and where the business are going. Security will be that one pillar in the business, just like you have finance and you have marketing and engineering, et cetera, to be sure the business are doing the right thing and is doing it in a safe, secure manner, but enabling the business to deliver, to provide what is required for the business.
I think it would be quite interesting to see how it would morph, say, even in just 20 years from now, not necessarily 40 years, 20 years from now, it would be interesting to see how that role will morph, like many other sort of C-level roles. So, Ewan Peters, many thanks for your time and insight.
It was my pleasure, Elaine. Thank you very much.
Thanks for joining me today on this episode of Heads Talk. Don't forget to subscribe to the show via my website, elainepringle.com/Heads Talk, or wherever you get your podcasts. Finally, I'd like to thank our sponsors, guests, and you for helping to make the show possible. Please join me next time, where I'll be featuring more executives, decision makers and heads of multinationals.
Heads Talk Podcast with your host Elaine Pringle-Schwitter.